This is your classic It's Breakfast with Jordan Curtis, and remote areas may see cheaper electricity prices in the very near future. I'm joined this morning by Minister for Energy and Mining, Dan Van Holst-Pelikan. How are you this morning, Dan?
Yeah, good, Jordan. Good. Thanks for having me on.
So can you tell me about the remote area energy supply scheme?
Yes, well, all around outback South Australia, including 15 sites on the Aboriginal lands and 13 other outback towns, we've got 28 power stations that operate very small grids for almost all of them very small communities, but Coober Pedy is one of them as well, which is a bit of a standout size-wise. They have different setups, but essentially they're all off the mains grid, and the government subsidises the cost of the electricity back to an average Adelaide metropolitan price. And thankfully, because the Adelaide metropolitan price is going down, as it is in country SA as well, we are now putting the price of the electricity down in those 28 remote towns as well, which is a terrific outcome.
So would remote towns otherwise normally see higher electricity prices than other towns?
Yeah, they would, Jordan. If you imagine, say there's a community that might have 10 or 20 houses in it, and there'd be one or two, sometimes three diesel generators. So you've got one running and one backup, or maybe two running at a time during high demand, perhaps in the middle of summer. So you've got those diesel generators, you've got a small network, just poles and wires, the same as we see in Port Pirie or Port Augusta or anywhere else. And the services, just with regard to supplying the electricity, keeping everything running, reading the meters, all of that sort of thing. On a cost per capita head, even a small system like that is much more expensive for the average household than it would be for anybody in, you know, an Upper Spencer Gulf city or down there in Adelaide. So it's subsidised to get those people back to a fair price, and because the price everywhere else is going down, they're going to get a reduction as well, which is really, really wonderful news.
And I guess, would solar panels be encouraged in areas like that? Because, of course, very remote areas tend to do get a lot of sunlight.
Yeah, look, it would be, and you're 100% right. Intuitively, solar would be terrific. But we do have to manage those small grids so that they can work. So, for example, if let's just say 10 or 20 houses, if everybody had solar and they're looking after themselves and their own supply during the day, and then when that dropped to a certain level, then the generators had to turn on to run the town, well, that would be pretty straightforward. But if people had solar coming and going and maybe batteries coming and going, you can imagine the sort of a nightmare it would have for the electronics and the digital systems running the generator, turning on, turning off, ramping up, ramping down. So, yes, we encourage it. Yes, we want it to happen. But it is almost town by town, the practicality of actually doing it. And with regard to solar, we're actually investing in solar on the Aboriginal lands because the government owns the equipment there and has a fair bit of sort of hands-on management control through contractors. We're actually investing $9 million so that they can be solar supported, if you like, with some fairly strict operational controls in place. And one of the things that will do, as well as helping get the cost of the electricity down, we will actually be able to significantly reduce the cost of emissions, the environmental cost of emissions. So 7,600 tons less of CO2 per year will be emitted from that. We're using that as a really good step forward, but also as a bit of a trial to see how we can make it work and how we can make it run this sort of thing out through the rest of the 28 power stations as well.
And the government have also committed $5 million to the Future Sustainability Program with regional areas. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, well, look, what we're looking at doing there is upgrading meters and putting smart meters in place, and the types of services that we can deliver then improve. And just harking back to what I said before about solar and some of the challenges of aggregating, one diesel generator with solar coming and going. The smarter the technology, the smarter the equipment that we've got running the system, then the more things we can do with it, lower emissions, lower cost. If you imagine just you know, I mean, take an extreme example. You had one diesel generator and one manual switch when it needed to be turned on and off. Now, it's not as blunt as that these days, but you compare that to the really smart stuff that's available now with smart meters and demand management and inverters and batteries and solar and backup generators at the other end, all fully, fully, completely mechanized. Now, these towns are in the middle of those two examples, but we want to move closer to that second example where it's fully mechanized, fully automated, and so we're investing to be able to do that.
Oh, away from energy, more on the mining side of things, Dan, is some jobs hope for the mining industry in South Australia?
Yeah, it is actually the energy and the mining industry. We have huge jobs opportunities in renewable energy, and that's not just about the generation, but battery manufacturing and installation, demand management, interconnection, but certainly on the mining side as well. We're very fortunate in South Australia to have terrific resources, and mining practices are getting better and better all the time with regard to safety for the environment, safety for people. So yeah, we're looking at 25,000 to 30,000 jobs in the next decade. And they could not come at a better time as we're fighting to restore our economy post-COVID.
Of course, I don't think environment and mining are things people usually link together in their minds.
Oh, look, I'd take a bit of an issue with that, if you don't mind. I mean, the mining industry traditionally has had that reputation. But, you know, these days, practices are extraordinary, with regard to safety for people and the environment. In fact, many of the mining companies say that the oversight from the government is too strict, actually, because we're so focused on that sort of thing. But there's another layer to that as well. In South Australia, we have extraordinarily good copper resources, and copper is one of the most important metals to go into a cleaner, more environmentally responsible digital world. Copper is absolutely vital, not just for your traditional, copper pipes for plumbing and things like that, but for mobile phones, for electric vehicles, for all sorts of digital technology. These things help restore and protect our environment. So in a perhaps unexpected way, environmentally responsible mining for copper has a double benefit for the environment.
And so what's the timeline on this, I guess, additional jobs plan? How soon can we see it up and running, and when will the benefits start rolling in?
Well, the figures we're calculating are over the next 10 years, but they start immediately. We're already investing over $200 million into our clean energy transition, and that's creating jobs. And on the mining side, we've got $10 million towards an advanced a discovery initiative, which is about exploration. We've got another $5.6 million going in to help develop infrastructure, electricity and water corridors for new mines. So we're getting on with the business straight away. And even in those early stages of that developmental work, there's a lot of employment in that. So we're getting off on the front foot, doing everything we can. But of course, when those things start to bear fruit, then not only those initial jobs, but the jobs really start to snowball after that, which is what we want to see.
No worries. Well, Minister, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Jordan.
It's Dan Van Horst-Pelikar, Minister for Energy and Mining, on your Classic It's Breakfast.